This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. And that is a song from 1985 called That's What Friends Are For, which was sung by Dionne Warwick, Gladys Knight, Stevie Wonder, and Elton John. It was a song about people that they knew inside and outside of the music industry who had contracted HIV and perhaps had full-blown AIDS at that point. That was 1985, a time when there wasn't a lot of attention being paid to it, but it was beginning to start as a big story in this country. 1985 was also around the time a guy by the name of Ron Woodruff contracted AIDS and then created a foundation to go around the FDA and other hurdles to get medicines and therapies, not just for himself, but other people in the Dallas, Texas community who had contracted this horrible disease. 1985 was also the time my next guest, Dr. Michael Sag, was finishing up his medical training in infectious diseases at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. So I thought, since all of these come together in the same year, I would invite Dr. Sag here today to talk about it. He is now the division director of the Department of Medicine and the Division of Infectious Diseases at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Dr. Sag, welcome to America Weekend.
Well, thanks for having me.
I know you've done a lot of work with people who've had HIV and full-blown AIDS, and the movie The Dallas Buyers Club stars Matthew McConaughey as Ron Woodruff as he contracts HIV and then starts this foundation, this Buyers Club, to help other people. You have seen the movie. How did it seem to you, having lived through it?
It was remarkably accurate on many, many levels. First off, Matthew McConaughey's portrayal of what it's like for the patient, and actually all the actors in the film, just nailed it. Their ability to capture the desperation, the fear, the anxiety, the illness itself. When he's driving down the road, there's a particular scene that it was almost like a flashback for me watching him go through this. I saw so many patients go through similar episodes. So I think on a lot of levels, it is an incredibly accurate film, and I think does a nice job of portraying the desperation and the frustration that patients and providers both had during that time.
You've written a book that's coming out next month called Positive, which is essentially about your encounters with people who had AIDS and dealing with the U.S. healthcare system. How tough was that in 1985 and the following years?
Well, it was very difficult. First off, I went into medicine to help people get well, obviously, and no matter what we could do back then, patients died, and it was just heartbreaking. And I capture a lot of those stories in the book, Positive, and but I also show how we transformed HIV from a almost certain death sentence to a chronic manageable condition, and that is something to really celebrate. What I try to do in the book is tell that story of how that happened behind the scenes, what happened in the halls of research, and how that progress is made. But I draw a parallel to our current healthcare system, where I think, much like AIDS was in 1985, it's very fragmented, very desperate for a lot of people. I don't think we're working together as a nation to make healthcare accessible and something that we can all be proud of. Right now, our system, in my view, is very fragmented, chaotic, inconsistent, difficult to manage for all of us. And what I'd like to see is have the country pull together, much like we did for HIV, and convert our current system to something that's more accessible and user-friendly for the patients and their families.
Yeah, you'd think it would be something we could have dealt with for decades now, but unfortunately we haven't. Maybe we're making some slight positive forward steps, but not the big leaps that we need to. If I may, I'd like to go back to the movie, and particularly the era of the mid to late 80s that the movie portrays. Ron Woodruff set up this Dallas Buyers Club. Did you know other people who did the same thing in other cities around the country?
Oh, absolutely. And actually, one of the frustrations of watching this movie was that Woodruff, for good or bad, had his Buyers Club set up as a for-profit entity, where he actually set it up more like a business where he personally profited. The other Buyers Clubs, like, for example, the one I knew best was in Atlanta, and it was not-for-profit, and it was just a wonderful community resource for so many people. And they work together in scouring the world, literally, for drugs that might be available, accessed them, got them into the country, and distributed them to patients who were, just like it showed in the movie, were very desperate for whatever they could get their hands on.
How hard was it to deal with the FDA and the bureaucracy of healthcare at that time?
Well, it was tough, and I don't want to take shots at the FDA so much, because a lot of the rules and regulations that were created for the FDA go back to the Snake Oil Act of 1817, and trying to protect the public against fraud and quackery. But at the same time, it didn't allow patients to have a more direct access to promising medicines early. And one of the lasting legacies of the AIDS epidemic today is that the FDA listened, and the Buyers Club were lead among them to sort of push them to develop what was called then a parallel track, which is drugs that were in development that were very promising, could also be made available for compassionate use to those who wouldn't be around by the time the clinical trials were over, and allow them access. And that's continued to today. It's been applied to hepatitis C in the current era, and to a lot of cancer therapies. So a lot of us are benefiting from the heroism of a lot of AIDS activists from the 80s and 90s.
In the case of AIDS drugs that were still going through trials and were unapproved by the FDA, didn't some of the people who were in these buyers clubs say, look, let us try this. We're going to die either way?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You can imagine someone who literally has 3 months to live. They know it. The drugs are at least a year and a half away, and the FDA might say, well, we can't release this to you. It might not be safe. And they look back at him and say, well, look at me. I'm dying. I won't even be here 3 months from now. If I don't gain access, what do I have to lose? And that was the dialogue that went on. I talk about that a bit in the book as well, some specific stories. But it was heartbreaking to watch folks go through that.
I'd like to ask you to share one story from your book, the story of Tom Blunt and Merck.
Yes. Well, Tom was running the Buyers Club in Atlanta, and he had a partner, Jim Straley, who was sick and was one of those people who only had a few months to live. And it was clear to all of us. I was one of Jim's providers. And Tom went up to Merck. They were developing a drug called Indinavir, which later got on the market and was one of the early, quote, heart therapies. And Tom went up there to plead his case to let early release of the drug to his partner, who was literally dying in Atlanta. And they initially told him no. And as he's leaving, his parting words, well, you know, in the 45 minutes that we've just been talking, the number of people who died of AIDS is probably equal to the number of people who died in the plane crash over Lockerbie when the 747 went down. And that just sent a chill through the group, because one of the lead researchers at Merck, who was integral in developing that drug, unfortunately had been killed, was among the victims of the Lockerbie bombing. And he left the room, and it was just very impactful. And following that, Merck changed their policy and allowed earlier access. Jim Straley was able to get on the drug. He rallied dramatically for a few months afterwards, but ultimately succumbed to the disease. That exact story I profile in the book.
30 years ago, if someone were to contract HIV, they didn't have much chance. What about now?
Oh, it's like night and day. Certainly nobody really wants to have HIV, of course, so we want to prevent transmission as much as we can. But for those who contract the HIV today, if they get tested, everyone should be tested for HIV, and if people are sexually active, they should be tested regularly. And if they test positive, if they get into care and get on treatment, the treatments we have today, if they're taken properly and regularly, will keep people alive for virtually a normal lifespan. And that is so, so different from what it was like back in 1985. So there's a lot of hope. We haven't cured anyone yet, at least not regularly. There's been a few exceptional cases, but we're working on that. But for the time being, the progress we've made, the ability for people to live a near normal lifespan is just fabulous.
I think one of the stories that helped change a lot of people's minds about HIV and AIDS was the Magic Johnson story. And of course, he's still around and still thriving and still looks great. And maybe he served as an inspiration to other people. I'm sure that Ron Woodruff did, and his story is told beautifully in Dallas Buyers Club. And I think Matthew McConaughey is probably going to win the Oscar for it, and Jared Leto for playing Rayon in the movie as well tomorrow night. I'm glad you were able to share your perspective with me today. Thanks so much, Doctor.
Well, thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
That's Dr. Michael Sagg, a professor and the division director of the Department of Medicine and Division of Infectious Disease at the University of Alabama, Birmingham. His book coming out next month is called Positive. America Weekend.